Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for making it on this Thursday night to our regularly scheduled Zoning Adjustments Board meeting. Seeing as that it is 7:01 p.m., we can get started. So the first item of business is to read the public advisory, which I will now proceed to do. This meeting will be conducted in a hybrid model with both in-person and virtual participation. The teleconference will be recorded as any ZAB meeting is recorded, and all other rules of procedure and decorum will apply for ZAB meetings conducted by teleconference or video conference. To access the meeting remotely, join from a device. Please use this URL. It is available in the agenda. If you do not wish to use your name to appear on the screen, then use the drop-down menu and click on Rename to rename yourself and be anonymous. To request to speak, please use the raise hand icon by rolling over the bottom of the screen. To join by phone, you can dial in the number provided in the agenda and enter a webinar ID also provided for in the agenda. If you wish to comment during the public comment portion of the agenda, please press 9 and wait to be recognized by the chair. For written comments, they must be directed to the ZAB secretary. That is not part of the public announcement, I believe, so I will not go over that, I think. Excellent. I think the online version of our agenda may also have a land acknowledgement. Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. We will now proceed with roll call.
When I call your name, please state present and disclose any ex parte communications. Commissioner Thompson.
Present, no ex parte.
Commissioner Palmateer.
Present, no ex parte.
Commissioner Allen.
Present, no ex parte.
Vice Chair Young.
Present, no ex parte.
Commissioner Sanderson.
Present, no ex parte.
Thank you.
Okay. Our next item is a land acknowledgement statement. The commission recognizes that the community we live in was built on the territory of Huichin, the ancestral and unceded land of the Chechenyo-speaking Ohlone people, the ancestors and descendants of the sovereign Verona Band of Alameda County. This land was and continues to be of great importance to all of the Ohlone tribes and descendants of the Verona Band. As we begin our meeting tonight, we acknowledge and honor the original inhabitants of Berkeley, the documented 5,000-year history of a vibrant community in the West Berkeley Shell Mound, and the Ohlone people who continue to reside in the East Bay. We recognize that Berkeley's residents have and continue to benefit from the use and occupation of this unceded stolen land since the City of Berkeley's incorporation in 1878. As the stewards of the laws regulating the City of Berkeley, it is not only vital that we recognize the history of this land, but also recognize the Ohlone people are present members of Berkeley and other East Bay communities today. The City of Berkeley will continue to build relationships with the Lisjan tribe and create meaningful actions that uphold the intention of this land acknowledgement. Okay, on to our next item on the agenda. So we now make available public comment on non-agenda items. So what that means is for all members of the public, we will make an opportunity available to provide comment on items and subjects not agendized. And so you can provide a green card at the back of the room to give public comment. You could also, as I mentioned in the public announcements, raise your virtual hand. So now is the time to provide public comment on non-agenda items. 3 minutes will be allotted per person. Okay, we will do online comments on non-agenda items first. So please raise your hand. Thank you. Okay, we have one virtual hand raised. That is Kelly Hammergren. So I will now allow you to provide your public comment, Kelly.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. So last time I attended ZAB, when it went to unmute, I was given this choice of panelist or attendee. And so I thought, you know, I'm not really a panelist, but I checked panelist. What happens if I check panelist? And what I found is that after I spoke, I was deleted and unable to get back on the Zoom because you eliminated me permanently from that meeting. And so I don't really understand why someone is given a choice of those two when I'm just an attendee, but, you know, I was curious, so I tried and I found out what happened. So I think that would be good if you're going to give people a choice, if that's what the staff does, it activates the unmuting, that there is an explanation to the person on the other side that they are going to get bumped from the meeting and they will not be able to sign in again. So that's my comment. And I have some comments on the projects, but those will come later when you call for it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment, Kelly. That was the only virtual hand I saw raised. So we will now move on to in-person comments on non-agenda items. I haven't received any green cards for in-person comments on non-agenda items. So we will move on. The next item in our agenda is an opportunity for us to move items on the agenda, potentially from consent to action, if the commission so chooses. So my understanding is this is, according to the commission guidelines of the city, a discretionary maneuver on the part of the chair of the commission. After having had some conversations with previous chairs, I will do what I understand to be the normal procedures that this commission has done. If there are any members of the commission who at this point wish to move items, we can do that. I'll also provide that window of opportunity once again after comment on the consent calendar. So if there are any members of the commission who wish to reorder, please feel free to do so and we can do that. Okay, now moving on to the consent calendar. So first, we will hold public comment on the consent calendar. As I mentioned before, if there are items on the consent calendar that any members of the public wish to comment on, those are our minutes, use permit 2425 on Durant Avenue, or use permit 0164 on MLK. Please feel free to submit a green card in person or raise your virtual hand. So first, we can move to virtual comment. So if you would like to provide a virtual comment over Zoom, please feel free to raise your virtual hand. Okay, we have one hand. Our first in line is Kelly Hammergren. You should be able to, there we go.
All right. So I'm commenting on 2425 Durant. And I would say that just because you can doesn't mean that you should. And I'm looking at this 20-story building. I haven't seen any buildings that are this height actually go through and get a building permit. So I'm not sure that it's even going to get built. But what is really disappointing is to see the concessions. and exemptions from apprenticeship, exemption from health care, exemption from prevailing wage, and then waivers to reduce the open space, usable open space from 5,239 square feet to 1,012 square feet, and to remove the landscaped area to zero where it should have been 40%. It's just really disappointing to see a project like this. And, you know, a lower building could be sustainable, could house lots of students. And it would be nice if we had buildings where the developers would not only pay prevailing wage, but that they would want to pay prevailing wage. So even if you can do all this, the question is, should you really do it? Is maximizing profit the only thing we care about? And I would recommend that you all listen to the discussion today on the podcast of Kara Swisher with Brea Brown on leadership. It's really an interesting discussion. And I think that puts this all in the proper context of what can you do and what should you do, and what is really best for the public and our resources. So that's where I'll end my comment. It's just, I wish people thought differently about what is good and right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that comment, Kelly. Seeing as though there are no more virtual hands raised, we will now move on to in-person comment on the consent calendar. First in my list, we have Kat to speak about Durant Avenue.
Okay, thank you very much. Hi, everyone. I'm Kat Velos. I'm the author of a book on social connection, and in my work, I help people that are trying to form community in places that weren't built for connection. And I advocate for cities to build places that work better for the people in them. And I'll start by saying that I'm not opposed to growth. I completely agree that we need to build more housing and we need to build more affordable housing. But what I am opposed to is repeating well-documented mistakes from the past that are creating the social problems of today, especially when it comes to social isolation and the erosion of community fabric. A 2024 wellness survey overseen by the university chancellor found that 66% of UC Berkeley undergrads report feeling overwhelming anxiety, and 60% of them are experiencing debilitating depression. If the plan is to put these students into a high-rise building without a ton of extra social support, it's a recipe for a really unfortunate outcome. There's a number of problems that I see here. One, research shows that high-rises harm social and emotional well-being. In tower apartments, physical separation between floors reduces those casual neighbor interactions, increases isolation, and reduces the community ties. Two, separation from the natural world. High-rise residents often lack contact with green space, so they don't have nature as a place to relax, and that negatively impacts, again, their mental, emotional, and physical health. Three, the current design inhibits place attachment. A Knight Foundation report in partnership with Gallup found that when people rank the top eight factors that make them feel attached to a place, they rank social offerings as number one and aesthetics as number three. And unfortunately, a building that looks like Berkeley is more likely to be one that students form an attachment to, and this looks like it could be anywhere. And four, a 20-story tower can be seen by the whole community, so what is it going to give back in exchange for that, that it takes away from that huge, huge view? Is it retail, cafes, social community space, or just a really big lobby and the opportunity to walk past it? I'm concerned that our neighbors and our students deserve better, and that this application repeats planning mistakes that have created significant problems in previous developments in other cities. So I encourage the board to keep these things in mind for this project and for all projects that come your way. We should learn from history so that we don't repeat it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your comment and for showing up tonight. Next, we have Xia Zhu speaking on Durant.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Xia Zhu. I did my PhD at UC Berkeley. I'm continuing to live and doing research in Berkeley. So Berkeley means a lot to me. And I live at this location since the end of 2017. Then about 2019, the current landowner, landlord bought the property from very nice previous landlord who actually did the redecoration of the 2024-21, which won the war. So here I'm come here to say, express my concern regarding, are we for the people, by the people, or for the people who making money? Because the track record of this landlord is really questionable. I just want to show some of the basic, the violation. First, he's been keep lying about, next slide, please. We don't have a, next slide, please. We don't have a on-site, or previous, actually, the one, yeah, this one. No property manager for the past 3 to 4 years. And when I communicate with him, he lied to me that there's only 16. He's meeting the requirements. Actually, when the developer, everyone come to the meeting, we know that there's 19. So the direct consequence of such thing is that, next slide, please. There's garbage always filled in the community space. And when there's an emergency, no one to reach. And we were had an incident that downstairs neighbor was the gas leak, and we couldn't get hold of him. Eventually, we had to call 911. Things like that happened. And the people, like, he exchanged to electronic lock, and people cannot get into the unit when the battery dies. And they don't replace. They ask tenants to replace. And then next slide, please. I'm just showing the, I just did a search on my view, on my Google photo view feed. And this is over the period of time, the picture I've taken, that all the garbage situation. And I report complaint multiple times over the, there's a systematic issue. They just care about because they don't want to hire anyone. They just have a, doing this kind of a call center style, and it has a people just pinching, do this, no track record, no sort of a make sure that all the duty is accomplished. And for even more so, next slide, please. And since he bought the, there's no carbon monoxide detectors installed, not until last year. And when I find out and complain, and I have to fight for, I have to call up the city in order to have other.
20 seconds.
Okay, 20 seconds. Then also there's no safety search. And more so, his last slide, please. He threatened when I was commute with his team, he threatened that if I keep quoting law, he's gonna have his lawyers contact me. And yesterday he contacted me again, and by retaliation, he didn't fix the things in my kitchen. And I almost got killed because of one of the broken in oven and stuff. There are more issues. I wish the panel can give me more time because we are taking care of all these vulnerable undergraduates.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Tim Frank.
Yes, good evening. Thank you. And I'm Tim Frank, and I'm representing the Alameda County Building Trades. And I'd like to begin by noting that we have no objections to the waivers. That building a project of this size is something we'd be very excited to do. But the concessions, all three of the concessions, are for labor standards that have very important health and safety impacts. And if the waiver were the concessions were granted, it would clearly provide an adverse impact on public health and safety. This is a precedent that hasn't been set before. Nobody has ever asked anywhere, any city in the state, for the set of concessions that are being asked for tonight. So it's a precedent, and it's clearly inconsistent with the intent of the density bonus law, which provides an exception that says that the applicant may not require a concession that has an adverse impact on public health or safety. And we have provided ample evidence that the prevailing wage requirements actually are dramatically protective of public health and safety. There's statistical evidence on this that is rock solid, 30 years in the making. That the apprenticeship standards, which are oriented around training, which includes safety training, clearly provide safety benefits. And when you concede those things, you make it more dangerous. The last question regards the public health impacts of whether the workers will have health care or not. And it is just very clear, the statistical evidence that having health care helps protect people's health is just rock solid. And when you look at this, at the construction industry specifically, this is the most dangerous industry in our entire economy. The importance of making sure that there's health care for these specific workers is very, very important. And we would like to see you deny the concessions. And if the applicant is willing to bring to move the project forward without those concessions, we would be thrilled to support the project. But we cannot support any of those concessions. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We now have EJ. Apologies if I mispronounce your last name. Sire, thank you.
Nobody ever gets it right, it's fine. Good evening, everybody. My name is EJ Sire. I'm here to also represent the Alameda Building and Construction Trades Council. We do support the new housing, always have and always will, but the applicant's attempt to use the state density bonus law to avoid the city's labor standards, not development standards, that we can't support. These standards were enacted to protect health and safety, and both the density law and the Housing Accountability Act preserve your authority to uphold these such protections. Within those same standards, if I'm not mistaken, it also specifically requires the applicant to come forth with a pro forma or some sort of proof that the financial impact is real and that these things, that the concessions are going to make it viable for them to build these projects. So when I looked through the staff report this evening and yesterday, I didn't see anything in there that showed that the applicant had given the demonstration of those facts at all. So I'm not understanding how they can just say, hey, we want this thing, but not give any proof to it. The hard hats ordinance and the prevailing wage ordinances, all those were done because the city council that sat in those exact same seats care about the local workforce, care about the middle class within Berkeley and the surrounding communities. So for a developer to come in and just say, we don't care about any of those and we're not giving proof to it, I'm not really sure how anybody could just approve those concessions. The project itself, great, it's fantastic, let's do it. But to just say we're gonna exclude anything that gives any kind of a benefit to the working class folks that are building this construction site, that to me just blows my mind. The direct public health and safety aspects that Tim Frank had mentioned, that's all noted very clearly in state law, that prevailing wages, historically and statistically, employ higher skilled workers. If you're very good at your job, your health risks and your safety risks on job sites are substantially less. That's been proven time and time again in multiple studies. So to say that any of these concessions don't directly impact public health and safety is a false statement. The biggest question that I have is how this body is being recommended to approve this project with the noted concessions with no proof. That part doesn't make any sense. And as Tim stated, this is the first of its kind. This is the first project coming up that's going to be applicable to the hard hats ordinance that was fought and created for 6 years before it finally came to a vote. So I'm not understanding how that fact is coming to this body without proof. If we want to move this project forward, it completely makes sense. The concessions, on the other hand, none of that makes sense, especially without the proof from the developer saying that it's going to provide that fiscal benefit to make this project pencil out. We're here all night, happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Thank you so much for your comment. There are no more in-person public comments on the consent calendar. So now we will move on to commission deliberation. So as I mentioned earlier, now's the time we can close public comment and decide to make a motion or move items from consent to action, as I mentioned earlier. So if anyone would like to make a motion, or do we have to vote to close public comment?
No, you don't.
Okay. Yes, public hearing is closed. I will make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
I would like to have more discussion on the board here about these three concessions. I too found it kind of strange that these major concessions were there without any documentation as to how they came to be that this was essential to build their project, because it's a financial issue. It seems to me is that they're cutting out costs. So I'm not ready to support any motion.
I second that. Also, I would like to hear a full hearing on that property, but I think the minutes and the other address, I'm fine with staying on consent.
Okay, I will revise my motion, seeing as that there are two commissioners who would like to move Durant Avenue to action. I would like to make a motion to approve the consent calendar without the Durant Avenue item, which instead will be considered on action. So that is the motion.
I second that.
Seconded by Commissioner Sanderson.
Thank you. We have a motion by Vice Chair Young and a second by Commissioner Sanderson to approve the approve the action minutes from September 25th, 2025, and also to move the item 2425 Durant to the action calendar. When I call your name, please state your vote. Commissioner Thompson.
Yes.
Commissioner Palmateer.
Yes.
Commissioner Allen.
Yes.
Vice Chair Young?
Yes.
Commissioner Sanderson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, the consent calendar is approved. All right, now we will go on to our action calendar. Our action calendar only has use permit 2425 Durant Avenue, so we will move on to that item. So typically we go city staff presentation and then questions, applicant presentation and then questions, and then public comment. So without further ado, we'll get into it.
Senior Planner Nilu Karamzadegan will be presenting this project. Mm-hmm.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Nilu Karim Zodegon, and the project before you is use permit number ZP2024-0162 at 2425 Durant Avenue. This project is to demolish three existing two-story residential buildings, including 19 units, and using state density bonus, construct a 20-story residential building with 169 units, including 6 extremely low income, 7 very low income, and 6 low income, and 13 moderate income units. Here you can see an existing and proposed street elevations. The project site is located to the west of Telegraph Avenue and to the south of Bancroft Way within the residential Southside Mixed Use District or RSMU. Here we have a perspective view from Durant and Telegraph Avenue looking at Dana Street before and after. The neighborhood is primarily university-oriented. It includes a diverse mix of commercial uses, typically in one- to two-story buildings. It also includes four- to six-story multi-unit apartment buildings, dormitories, and institutional buildings. The proposed building is 20 stories, 208 feet tall, includes 148,940 square foot of gross floor area, and the major components of this multifamily building are 169 dwellings, including 105 studios, one one-bedroom, 46 two-bedrooms, and 17 three-bedrooms, for a total of 249 bedrooms. Here we have a sample of floor plans. The ground floor includes the lobby, mailroom, bike parking, as well as residential support spaces. On level 8, we have an indoor lounge with associated resident amenities. On level 13, we have community spaces, including private study areas and social zones. Additional resident lounge and gathering spaces are provided on level 17. And we have 1,012 square foot of usable open space that's provided as a roof deck, which is connected to a covered outdoor and indoor lounge on level 20. This is a density bonus project with 85 units as base for the number of base units. Out of that, 13 very low income units and 13 moderate income units are provided for 100% density, which results in 86 possible units. However, the applicant is only using 84 density bonus units for a total of 169. We have 7 waivers and 3 concessions. Staff report and analysis and required findings are provided in the packet. Staff were able to make the required findings for CEQA, the Berkeley Municipal Code required findings for approval, findings for use permits in the RSMU district, and findings for the demolition of residential units, and other required findings related to density bonus and the Housing Accountability Act. Because the project's consistency with the zoning ordinance and the general plan, staff recommends that the Zoning Adjustment Board approve ZP 2024-0162, subject to the provided findings and conditions of approval. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your presentation. Now is our opportunity to provide any questions for staff.
I have a question. On the, how do I look at my computer at the same time? On the incentives, was there in the application anything that explained why they needed those, how those concessions were necessary to cover the cost of the affordable units?
In the applicant statement, there was a general explanation on how these concessions are required for the project affordability. Mm-hmm. However, by law, they are not required to provide an explanation.
Well, under our zoning ordinance, it says, under required information for applications, any incentives and concessions that are sought under the 65915, my computer just went blank. They have to provide information justifying how they're necessary for the cost. And then there's another one that allows the city to ask for additional documentation. So
so we do ask for just a general explanation. Mm-hmm. In order for staff to evaluate whether the request for a concession is reasonable or not. Reasonable in terms of, like, would it, you know, to just the average person indicate that this would be a cost reduction for the project. However, state law prevents us from asking for specific information. We used to require pro forma statements for concessions. We can no longer do that because the state law doesn't allow us to do that. So we are only limited to asking for just a general reasonable explanation for the cost reduction for the project to provide for affordable units.
Okay, thank you.
I can also provide what is hopefully helpful information. I recall that I think the law was amended in 2024 to change how the financial feasibility model, I'm still trying to look for that. But in the meantime, there was a court ruling, Schreiber v. City of LA, where Second District Court of Appeals in 2021 found that, and I'm just gonna read what JD Supra, the website, characterized the ruling as. The court explained that the density bonus law does not require applicants to establish that the grant of incentives or waivers would result in cost savings. Instead, the burden of proof is on the city, not the applicants, to overcome the presumption that incentives or waivers will result in cost reductions. So, just citing that. Any other questions?
I just would like to comment that that really leaves the city in a very awkward position, and I'm not quite sure how I'm going to vote on this, but it would seem that if information is reasonable, we could ask reasonable information, but your view is what's in our application requirements is what the world would consider reasonable and nothing more.
Okay, we can now move on to applicant presentation, unless there are any other questions for staff.
TMI. Or do you want my thumb drive? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think, let's see. Per Kelly Hammergren's question, am I joining as a panelist or staying as an attendee?
You'd be asked to join as a panelist.
Okay. And I can share screen. Okay, let's get to it. Good evening, Zoning Adjustments Board, Mr. Chair, staff. First, I want to thank staff for the hard work on this project. We've resolved some issues along the way. And I personally believe this is a wonderful project for our South Side because along the lines of sustainability and green belts and urbanism, this is the place where we need density in our town. And especially next to the downtown and BART. This is where we are. You all are familiar with this neighborhood, and I'm not going to make this presentation long because we want to get to the discussion on concessions and labor. Staff has done a great job already of going through all the project details. We think the project is going to meet the ground really beautifully and provide a terrific pedestrian experience. There's an incredible amount of open spaces also within the project, not just the rooftop, not just the ground level that's set back from the street, but the every second or third or fourth floor on both sides of the building, there are large lounge spaces to help stimulate efforts for community amongst the student population. We're only a half a block from campus here. Students walk around the corner and they're on campus. Again, this is how the building's gonna meet the street. This is one of the lounges. They're up and down both sides of the building. Let's go back to that really quick. I think somebody asked about what's the project gonna do for the city. The project's gonna provide millions of dollars a year in revenue to the city in gross receipts taxes and in property tax lift for the property, et cetera. There's more money that's going to come as a result of the project, and I'm not going to go through each of those points right now, but this is where we are, and this one will provide the public art fee and almost $500,000 to the school district, even though there are not going to be any K through 12 students living in this building. So this is all going to be college students. The project meets our sustainability goals or exceeds them for water conservation, energy, transportation, building design. Again, really, it's the density right here and the lack of automobile parking and the proximity of the destination for the residents that make this building such a green building. So let's talk about the concessions a little bit. I believe you have a memo from the city attorney on your desk as well that was given to the Zoning Adjustments Board a couple of years ago. You got it in your supplemental today. The city attorney has already opined that the concessions under state density bonus law well cover a request for the labor provisions. I would note that almost every single residential housing housing project that you've approved in the last couple of years has taken advantage of concessions for hard hats. This is certainly not the first project to do it. It won't be the last project to do it. The other thing that I will add is that it's absurd to think that this project is going to be built without labor. My client is just not ready to sign a project labor agreement right now. We don't know when construction might start. He's putting financing together for it, and when the time comes, we're going to have that conversation. Are all of the union trades going to be involved? I'm not sure, but certainly most of this building is going to be built by union labor. Nobody's going to build a high rise without concrete, steel, electrical, etc. From the union. And I've already advised my client that having a mix of union and non-union isn't going to be great for the work site, and that's going to be part of his consideration. And I suspect that this could very well be a full union build, like several of our other high-rises approved downtown will be. The third concession on this one is the prevailing wage. It's just the third stool. And to say that there's a public health and safety impact by not using union labor is just an absurd interpretation of the state law. The city is just not able to require union labor in California. We're very proud of this project. We've worked very hard on it. It's well located and addresses a still burgeoning need in our community for high-density student-oriented housing. Even though we had a bit of a glut of it last year, those units are now filled up. You've seen the Berkeley Side article about it. And we're looking forward to advancing this project, and we're looking forward to sitting down and talking with the union when the time is right. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Now is the time for any questions from commissioners.
I have a question. And I'm just going to ask it, and then you can think about how to phrase it better. So what we've there are units on the site right now. I appreciate that your client is figuring out financing, and there's a lot going on in the world that we're all figuring out. And what we've seen in a couple of sites throughout Berkeley is where a building has been vacated or it's been demolished. And then that site sits in a sad condition. I think the buildings, the residences that are there are very attractive residences. They're providing housing, although there might be some debate about how great of a landlord is there. I don't think we can ask for a commitment, but it would be great to have you tell me that they intend to keep the buildings there until they have their financing things ready.
Yeah, I mean, there's residents in this building. We've been working with the rent board and staff on this question. No housing developer is going to tear down units and need to relocate tenants until they're ready to build the building, because they have to pay for that relocation. They have to pay for the rental offsets, et cetera. I also believe that because of some of what we've seen in the downtown, and maybe staff can address this, there's going to be a higher bar for that demolition permit and what looks like when a project is ready to actually go forward. I will note that Core Spaces is in for its demolition permits right now and moving forward into building permits. So the east half of Center Street will be under construction probably, what did we say, February maybe or March of next year, you might start seeing some demolition. So yeah, those buildings will be there until this project is basically ready to pull building permits, and we've worked with all of the tenants that are still there and relocated them.
Okay, then I'll just give my stink eye to staff. Don't approve any demo permits until you know you've got a building permit.
Can you please speak to the images we saw of the current units and the lack of support of them? And you showed us some really beautiful images of this new structure. Are the same folks going to be providing maintenance and support for that?
No, and he's got a property management platform that he's working on right now. He has a couple of small projects in Berkeley. This is by far his largest venture so far, by far. He did the project that opened last year at 1773 Oxford that you all approved a couple of years ago, and that came out as quite a nice project. But similar circumstances, really, the building was in rough shape, and so the new building is much different. I have not seen those pictures before. I will work with my client to make sure that stuff is cleaned up. We have to. Yep.
Okay. Unless there are any more questions for the applicant, we can now move on to public comment. So, we've heard comment about this item as it existed on consent. So I encourage members of the public to either only introduce new information or quickly their position, oppose or support. So we will first move to digital public comment. If there's anyone in the Zoom call that would like to provide comment, please raise your digital hand. Kelly Hammergren.
Are you getting an echo? Do I need to move my iPad?
You sound fine.
Okay. So I was really interested in Tim Frank's comments and also board member Sanderson on, I believe there is something in the zoning ordinance about detriment. And it seems like we have heard that there are detriments to potential workers by denying health care coverage through the concessions and not paying the prevailing wage. So I would really like consideration of the detriments of these concessions and how a building with these concessions can be approved and the detriments in the zoning ordinance can be pushed aside. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kelly. We'll now move on to in-person comments. First, we have Xia Zhu.
Hello again. Because you mentioned that regarding the benefits and the welfare of the people involved in the construction and the future, possible future of his staff member, I just want to bring out the fact that currently he has multiple locations besides the 200 already existing tenants at Berkeley. He has also similar structure in, around Rutgers and Boston. So he's using this kind of call center style doing the management. So there's no one on site, and he only hired temporary worker without providing any insurance benefits. And then when people come inside doing the dangerous job, I asked the people, the maintenance people, they said there's no insurance. Like if anything should happen. So I just want to make sure, even in the event this is gonna be building, but do you have any procedure that would guarantee the construction worker and the future staff members, and his track record is really questionable.
Thank you so much. Next, we have EJ Sire.
Long time no see, everybody. So I'm going to speak directly to the concessions on this one. So first, the apprenticeship piece. For more than 80 years, apprenticeship programs have ensured that workers receive hands-on training, classroom instruction, and proper supervision. The city's hard hats ordinance requires contractors to use programs that meet rigorous standards. Waiving this requirement would undermine training and compromise worker readiness and safety. Second, healthcare. Construction is one of the most hazardous industries, with statistically over 1,000 of work injuries nationally. Since 2020. Berkeley has seen its share of tragedies. Research shows that workers without health insurance face a much higher risk of death. And this is why the city adopted healthcare expenditure requirements to make sure contractors are not shifting the burden of workplace injuries onto workers and their families. Allowing a waiver here would directly endanger lives. Third, the prevailing wage piece. Higher wages are tied to safer job sites. California's workers' compensation system reflects that fact. Contractors paying prevailing wages employ more skilled workers who experience fewer and less severe injuries. That's a quote. Waiving this requirement would lower standards, increase risks, and invite irresponsible contractors into this community. These three standards are not technicalities, they are lifelines. They protect workers from injury, ensure families have health care, and keep Berkeley job sites safe. For these reasons, I'm urging you to deny the applicant's requested concessions on labor standards while allowing the project to move forward in compliance with Berkeley's protections. And I do want to mention the fact that this city was the first in the entire nation to adopt an ordinance like hard hats. This is the first project where hard hats has been directly noted within the project documentations. So this is the first project where a concession directly related to hard hats is being presented. No other project has. And if we had to raise our right hand and swear under oath to the facts, I would love to right now. You will not find any other project where hard hats has been specifically mentioned for concessions. Thanks.
Thank you for your comment. We have Tim Frank again.
All of mine in the last year, all of them, all the ones that were applied for before in the last year.
I encourage members of the audience to save.
I am Tim Frank once again. First, I would note that Mark Rhodes acknowledged that the memo from the city attorney is years old, and then he intimated that there is a whole slew of projects that to which hard hats applied that had come forward and concessions had been granted. None of that is true. I mean, that the fact that the city attorney's letter may have been old is true, but the notion that there have been hard hats projects that have come forward, the reason for that is that the projects that have come before you that since hard hats was put in place, I mean, you have to understand that developers rushed a whole set of projects right before hard hats actually took effect, after it was adopted by the council, but before it actually took effect. And this is the first big project to which this actually applies. And we've been tracking these things very carefully. And the notion that there have been a whole slew of density bonus projects with concessions regarding hard hats is just not true. This is the precedent-setting project. We had two sets of lawyers looking at the information that we presented you today. We are in very solid ground here. There is a very clear relationship between every single one of these three policies and public health or safety. And the finding that you see before you that suggests that there is no adverse impact on public health or safety cannot be substantiated. So we will see this either fail tonight or we'll see it at council. But we think that it is a terrible mistake to grant concessions on what are clearly very important standards to protect public health and safety.
Thank you so much for your comment. Now that in-person public comment is concluded, we can offer a response from the applicant to public comment.
Thank you once again, and I do appreciate being here tonight. I just don't have a lot to say. The state of California doesn't allow local agencies to discriminate against who builds projects. That's the bottom line. And as I said, we will be sitting down with the union when the time is right for this project and trying to figure out what's best, what the best path forward is going to be. I think on the issue of concessions for hard hats, you should just ask your staff. I mean, California Theater was one. There's all Bill Schrader's projects, Patrick Kennedy's projects. I mean, they're all hard hat free through the use of concessions, many of them, not all of them. I probably overspoke. And I think that we should just get on with it here. If they want to appeal it to the city council, that's fine. It's not the first time this has been the case. It won't be the last. But we need to build housing in our city, and I want us to move forward. This is the right place to do it. Thank you.
Thank you for your response. Now is time for commissioner deliberation. So if anyone has any thoughts, please go ahead.
I'll pull off the Band-Aid. I will make a motion to approve. I hear what's been said from union representatives, from Kelly Hammergren, others here. I don't, I don't necessarily disagree with what I'm hearing, but this is where we find ourselves in the state and where we find ourselves with the housing crisis. Years ago, when I was staff to the Zoning Adjustments Board, one of the commissioners made a comment of, well, would you rather you walk by people living in tents, or would you rather this project be built? And somebody laughed, and she's like, no, really, this is where we are. And so I agree with Mark Rose that this will be appealed either way. This will go for further discussion in front of the city council. So that's my motion, is to approve.
I'll second the motion.
I have a question on the conditions of approval. I was looking for the requirements for an on-site manager to live in the building. I didn't see it, but there's a lot of text here. I seem to remember that we typically or often would have an on-site manager, so whenever there are problems, and that the manager would be accessible.
Staff is not aware of a requirement for a building that's not a GLA to have an on-site manager.
Okay. Well, in that case, then, I'd like to offer.
Housing code requires on-site manager if there's more than 19 units, and if it's more than 16 units, it's being violated.
I'm sorry, which section of the code?
Let me find the code.
I'll have here. Thank you. I'm gonna have the code open here somewhere. Well, go ahead.
1040-010-107-1, owner and representative of the premises, and the first one, the owner of every apartment house in which there are 16 or more apartments, a manager reside upon the premises.
Okay, thank you. Given that it's already required in state law, and they are required to meet state law, I don't see a need for creating another condition of approval. But thank you for your input.
I have just comments and hopefully helpful information on this conversation about concessions. I have been involved in the Southside rezoning since 2018. I was involved with the group More Student Housing Now, which got the council to allocate $250,000 for the EIR that led to the south side of rezoning, which actually rolled into the city's housing element wide EIR. It was a huge, momentous moment, and I'm really excited to see this project now take advantage of the new zoning regulations and use both moderate and lower income units to get the density bonus that it is requesting. So a little bit of background on density bonus. What's going on here? The density bonus law, it's been around for many decades in California. It probably doesn't need repeating for our commission, but it, for the public, allows a project to do three main things in general. First, in exchange for below market rate units, the project is afforded more density than what the zoning otherwise allows. The other two prongs of that are that the project is entitled to waivers in order to obtain those concessions. And then the project is also entitled to concessions or incentives or concessions, which result in cost reductions. So the conversation is really about these concessions / incentives. The density bonus provides a definition for what a concession or incentive is. And it also provides the findings by which a city must, the findings a city must make in order to deny them. Subdivision K defines a concession or incentive. You could find it, but it basically is pretty wide ranging. We've approved concessions or incentives for hard hats, it's true. The on-site art requirement / in lieu fee. We've approved incentives or concessions for bird safe glass, which is also another constituency in the city that created a development standard that they care about. So it is wide-ranging in how it's defined. Now, the findings of denial. Density bonus states that there are very few narrow reasons that a city can use to deny a concession. It would have to have a specific adverse impact on health and safety that is defined as it is in the Housing Accountability Act. And that means a significant, quantifiable, direct, and unavoidable impact based on objective, identifiable, written public health or safety standards, policies, or conditions as they existed on the day of the application, which was deemed complete. So in terms of evidentiary thresholds, that is about as high as it can get. So the question is, do those thresholds, are they met by the evidence in the administrative record for us here tonight? So we have been presented with a public comment, which is now in the administrative record, and there are two pieces of data that I believe some members of the public have shared to try to meet that evidentiary threshold. The first one is about how dangerous the construction industry can be. It's this letter states that it is responsible for roughly 20% of all workplace fatalities in the U.S., despite only employing 10% of the workforce. And then the other piece of evidence has to do with healthcare. According to the BLS, the construction industry accounted for 1,008 fatal workplace injuries in 2020. There's some other statistics from the Cambridge Health Alliance, which found that Americans have a 40% higher risk of death compared to those with insurance, those who are uninsured. So those two pieces of data, to me, don't constitute a quantifiable, direct, and unavoidable impact. So, you know, based on that reading and also what the city attorney has said, I don't think that it would be responsible for us, based on a pure textual interpretation of the density bonus, to deny the concessions or incentives. I also want to clarify something I said about Schreiber versus Los Angeles. That ruling, I need to clarify, it was made in 2021. It actually did at the time allow cities to require documentation to demonstrate cost reductions as a result of the concessions or incentives. However, AB 1287, which amended the density bonus in 2024, 3 years later, actually changed that evidentiary standard in subdivision A of the density bonus law to delete the words incentives or concessions. So we actually cannot request those documents anymore. Anything else I wanted to share? Yeah, it's a very powerful law. There are two Court of Appeals opinions that actually came out of Berkeley, Wolmer 2009 and Wolmer 2011. You know, I think we got to follow it. So those are my comments.
So I believe you have a motion. Do we have a second? Okay.
So unless there are any more comments, we can put it to a vote.
So we have a motion from Commissioner Allen and a second from Vice Chair Young to approve the project as presented. When I call your name, please state your vote. Commissioner Thompson?
Abstain.
Commissioner Palmateer?
Yes.
Commissioner Allen?
Yes.
Vice Chair Young?
Yes.
Commissioner Sanderson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, the motion is approved and the permit has been granted to the applicant. There is now a 14-day window by which the permit can be appealed. So that concludes our action calendar. On to item 8 of our agenda, subcommittee reports. Is there any updates from our DRC members?
Yes, there is. And I apologize for not providing the report at our last meeting because we had a DRC meeting and I missed it somehow. But I am prepared to provide the quick report tonight. The last DRC, we looked at the property at 2445 to 2449 Dwight and Telegraph. That's the Chandler building on that corner. It's got some beautiful historic pieces on it. And this proposal is going to be a 8-foot mixed-use building with commercial on the ground floor. Wait, did I say that? 8-story, 85 foot?
Okay.
Okay, yeah, sorry.
8-foot.
Oh, you like, really? That's good. You can put some short stories.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be
sorry,
a lot of close community in that building.
Yeah.
So there's going to be, it's got a 20% density bonus, and it's got 3 very low income units in that bonus. So in the recommendations, there are a list of things. We talked about the facades. It's one of those buildings that's also going to have one of those transformers kind of in the front center, which is challenging. So it's unfortunate that they have to work around that, but they had some beautiful plans, and it's going to be impacted by that, which is really unfortunate. There was a recommendation of really making the existing brick work with the new colors, so that there's some seamless transition between that. I thought it looked very attractive, the recommendations. There was also, as far as the landscaping goes, there was a really, what I thought, interesting recommendation for a green roof, actually. That's quite a large roof, and we would love to see that happen, and they seemed somewhat open to it. So I'm hoping to see that, fingers crossed, when it comes here to us. Yeah, there was, what else am I missing? Oh, I thought there was also some really interesting discussion on that the ground floor storefronts not have reflective glass on it and instead have clear glass to kind of open up the community and make it so that it didn't feel like such a wall there. And it was, that building was more a part of the community and neighborhood. Yeah, there were also recommendations about the units themselves. So really looking forward to that coming here.
Can you say the address again?
That was 24, make sure I get you right, 2445 to 2449 Dwight. So it's on the corner of Dwight and Telegraph. And I used to eat breakfast there all the time. Hope to eat breakfast there again in the future.
Thanks so much for the update.
You're welcome.
Our last item is correspondence. If there's any correspondence from any of the members of the commission. If not, moving on. ZAB announcements. There's nothing agendized, but I guess if you have anything to say. Okay, and then staff announcements, if there are any. Great, and then I will announce that our next meeting is October 30th, and then we can move to adjourn. Do we make a motion to adjourn? I make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second.
Thank you. So we have a motion from Vice Chair Young and a second from Commissioner Palmateer to adjourn the meeting. When I call your name, please state your vote. Commissioner Thompson.
Yes.
Commissioner Palmateer.
Yes.
Commissioner Allen.
Yes.
Vice Chair Young.
Yes.
Commissioner Sanderson.
Yes.
Thank you.